Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A red plus sign stands before two words, one white, the other red. Impact Partners. A word in black appears on a slate background, diagonal to a slate word on black. Actual Films. A Netflix documentary. A figure appears in silhouette.
I'm gonna not refer to you by name so that we keep you anonymous. So I'll refer to you as John R. And we're gonna use animation to hide your identity.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Animated artwork fills in the silhouette to show a young man in a hoodie, in association with Impact Partners and Artemis Rising Foundation.
So, what's your understanding of what we're doing here today?
An interview on the Audrey Pock case.
A view drifts out of a classroom with vacant desks.
What is the Audrey Pod case?
Text appears in quotes. John underscore R.
There was a criminal case about a night on September 2nd, 2012. And Audrey Pod committed suicide, and there was a bunch of things out there and the whole case, yeah.
As he tilts his head, his animated image fades into a black screen. An Actual Films production.
I'm gonna refer to you as John B. in the course of this interview so that we don't use your name. And we'll disguise your face to keep you anonymous.
Okay.
Animated artwork fills another silhouette.
How would you describe the case?
John underscore B.
It was definitely very hard. I was really tormented in school. Like, I was being bumped up in the hallway and, you know, called a rapist. And, yeah, a lot of harsh terms. And my car, it got spray painted. And, yeah, and then on the back it said, like, for Audrey.
So you felt kids were really blaming you for Audrey's death?
Yes, definitely.
A video shows football players.
Did you know when you were taking those pictures that it was a crime? Did you know that in the moment?
No, not at all. You know, we just thought it'd be funny to just laugh and joke about. And kids said they saw the photos. I think the whole football team got interviewed by the police, and, you know, so, yeah, that's what happened.
The players in red jerseys reading Saratoga jog onto the field. Photos fill the screen, showing a dark-haired teenage girl. Text types out, Audrey. An aerial view glides over a suburb with mountains beyond, Saratoga, California.
This is media number one of the videotape deposition of John B. Case name, Pott versus John B. et al. Case number, 113-CV-244-689.
Okay. Going back in time, the party happened on September 3, 2012, right?
Yes.
An aerial view moves from a suburban neighborhood to a high school football field beyond a tree line. Red numbers glow on the field scoreboard.
Mike out! Mike out!
A player runs onto the field.
How did you become aware of the party?
I don't remember.
He scratches the back of his neck. At the football game, cheerleaders dance with pom-poms.
It is pretty blurry, like, you know, it was almost 4 years ago, so, I mean, here, this party was being hosted by Audrey and Emily. And, you know, it was my first party I've ever been to. I was a freshman, I just got my license. You know, kind of thought I was cool and stuff. I drove my friends there.
In a video taken at a beach, Audrey catches a wave on a bodyboard. She grins as she rides it.
Sheila and I have shared joint custody of Audrey a couple days a week for me, and Sheila had a couple days a week.
Larry Pott, Audrey's father.
She was always a happy kid, fun kid. She loved practical jokes.
He smiles wistfully. Various photos show Audrey as she grows up. Sheila Pott, Audrey's mother.
And when she got a little bit older, we used to like to cook together. Sometimes we would turn on the Food Network, and we'd wait till we found something that we both liked, and then we would go out and get everything and we'd make it.
Audrey, her dad, and other kids play in a pool.
And her friends would come over and play in the pool.
In the home video, Audrey spits a mouthful of water like a fountain.
She was very outgoing. She made friends easily. But she was very self-conscious. So it would be the bra, and then the cami, and then the t-shirt, and then she would bend over in the mirror and make sure you can't see anything.
A shaky video shows Audrey in a bedroom.
She was one of my only true friends.
A number of selfies of the two friends flashes by, along with photos of them posing in various locations as they get older.
We were kind of like an inseparable pair throughout middle school.
Amanda Lay, Audrey's friend.
So there was not a week where we didn't go to each other's houses at least once.
In a photo, the girls lie with their heads next to each other in opposite directions.
Did you ever access a Yahoo account wherein you accessed images or photographs of nude or partially nude minor girls?
In the videotape deposition, dated January 6, 2015, the animated version of John B. frowns.
Yes.
Do you know who created that Yahoo account?
John B. drops his gaze for a moment.
Kids at Bellarmine.
How was that Yahoo account brought to your attention?
All my friends were using it.
Pardon me?
All my friends were using it and going on to it.
When did you first start accessing this Yahoo account?
Sixth or seventh grade.
In a bathroom, Amanda and some other girls primp in front of a mirror.
They were pretty persistent, the boys in middle school. It was very odd. Like, even today I think back and it's like, wow. There was definitely pressure to have boobs, and I had none. I'm gonna admit it. I was a late bloomer.
I'm done.
So boys didn't really ask me for pictures and things like that because I didn't have anything to send. But most of the girls in my grade did. Yeah, a couple of girls in our group of friends, actually. They did full nude.
A subtitle. Did Audrey?
No, she never did. Boys always asked her, because, you know, she was one of the most developed girls in our grade. So naturally, boys will always ask her for it first, you know? But I made her promise me, you know, never, ever send them. You'll just get made fun of, or, like, it would be wrong.
At night, Amanda locks her front door.
Scared me. I was like, hi. Oh.
She rides in the back seat of a friend's car.
We got to Emily's and they were already wasted, everybody. They were just like very sloppy, you know. Pizza was on the floor. People were like making out on the couch and it was just uncomfortable.
With John R.
People with hickeys, with hands down each other's pants. It's like, I don't know, it's kind of new to me to see that.
In photos, Audrey poses with her tongue sticking out.
Audrey was really messed up. She was, like, making out with people. I took her upstairs and had her lay down, but then she just came back downstairs. So I left, and then I guess things got worse.
In a videotaped deposition on January 9, 2015.
Do you remember telling me in your prior deposition that you carried Audrey upstairs?
I think so.
Do you remember telling me that she was passed out during that period of time?
Well, I don't remember.
John R. shifts his eyes.
So is it your testimony, sir, that you carried her upstairs, passed out, and then when you laid her on the bed, she suddenly just woke up?
Objection mischaracterizes her testimony, and it's argumentative.
Is that your testimony?
No.
What's your testimony?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
You don't remember what?
I don't remember if I carried her or what. I don't.
Tell me what you remember about when you went to go retrieve the markers.
Check to the
form. I remember saying, let's go draw on Audrey when I saw the markers.
Well.
Markers draw around his animated image.
Part of it, the drawing part was like a practical joke. Like, we've grown up, like, coloring on our cousins, and like when someone falls asleep first, coloring on each other just because, like, didn't mean for there to be any harm in it other than a practical joke. Like, Audrey actually drew on me in class like a few days before that weekend anyways, and it was just, yeah, it was just something a little stupid thing, but it wasn't like we were trying to like shame her or like be like mean or anything.
The marker draws over his image.
And for the record, this is a text exchange between you and a friend. Is that right?
Yes.
And so I'm going to ask you to read from line 18 forward and tell me who's saying what, please, out loud.
My friend said, "So what went down?" I replied, "You can't tell Audrey I told you, okay?" My friend said, "Okay." I sent, she passed out, and we colored half her face black and colored all over her body, like her boobs, and it said, "I was here," and in her pants by her vagina, it said, "I was here," and it said harder on her leg and had an arrow to her vagina, and on her back, it said anal and had an arrow down to her ass, and there was just Sharpie everywhere. It was hilarious. Ha, 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 ha. My friend said, "So technically you stripped her and drew everywhere." I said, not just me, all the guys.
What happened next?
I don't remember, but they were saying that there was something inside her, like a marker or something. They weren't sure, and they kept wanting me to check, and I ended up, yeah, fingering her.
His folded hands fidget, and his gaze remains down.
What did you see John R. do?
In the deposition with John B.
Finger.
For how long?
Like, a second.
What did Audrey do during the time that she was being fingered by John R.?
John B. closes his eyes for a moment and rubs his mouth.
She said harder, and she, like, liked it.
How do you know she liked it?
She was saying harder and laughing.
How many times did you hear her say harder when John R. was fingering her?
John B. sways in his chair, swiveling it slightly from side to side.
Eight
times. So she said it harder eight times over a period of a second?
Yes.
How do you do that? Can you say harder eight times within a second, right now?
Check to the form.
Harder, 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 harder. Right. Is it possible to say that in a second?
Is this your best estimate?
Okay, then she said it twice in a period of time.
So it's twice, right?
Yeah.
So do you recall telling the police when asked that you did not finger Audrey at all?
Yes.
Was that a lie?
Yes.
Why did you lie to the police?
I was scared. I didn't have my parents there or my attorney. I was trying not to get in trouble.
Have you done that before? Lying to get out of trouble?
I'm struggling not to answer that.
I didn't know anything at the time, but they used indelible markers, completely covered one whole side of her face, lifted up her bra and her panties, drew on her private parts, wrote nasty things on her body, and then sexually assaulted her.
On Audrey's social media page, a chat window to Bob Z opens up. Beside Audrey's profile picture, it reads, "I don't remember anything. Can you please tell me what happened?" A chat to Joe X from Audrey reads, "What are people saying so I can clear any lies up? I'm so pissed. Do you know about the marker thing?" In a message to John R., Audrey writes, "Can you please tell me what happened? Who did it?"
The next morning, I went and I picked her up. And I noticed right away that she had green marker down the side of her leg. And I said, "Why do you have green pen on you?" And she made some excuse like, "Oh, so-and-so did something."
In the chat, Audrey writes, "John R., I need to talk to you." He He responds, "What?" She writes, "One word, marker." He replies, "What about marker?" "You know what I'm talking about. You know I'm not so upset at the fact you guys drew on me. I'm mad at where shit was drawn. You knew how drunk I was." Joe X sends her a message, "You were one horny mofo." She writes, "Dude, I was asleep and people did shit to me." He says, "Honestly, like really, no joke, everyone knows." She writes, "OMG, WTF, how?"
She said, "You know, I'm scared, like what if I did something that I didn't want to do?" She had no clue about the pictures though. And I remember, like, I think maybe during break or during lunch or something, like, I saw a group of boys just, like, crowded around. They were looking down, so it looked like they were looking at a phone. I said, "Look at that. Like, they're definitely looking at a picture." She witnessed it right there, you know?
A chat with John R. pops up, "And there are no pictures of me, right?" He writes, "They are deleted, and I didn't take them. I promise it wasn't me." Are they really all deleted? Yes. John R., why did you let that happen? Do you know how people view me now? I fucked up and I can't do anything to fix it. He finally replies, "Everyone messes up. Audrey, this will blow over before the week's over. You know Saratoga people make a big deal for a week and then forget about it." She writes back, "You have no idea what it's like to be a girl."
How many pictures did you take of Audrey that night at the party?
John B. leans back in his seat, his eyes averted.
5 to 8.
He sits forward again, swiveling his chair back and forth.
So when she's investigating this, it didn't matter if one person saw or 4,000 people saw, because to Audrey, everybody in her little world, which was that high school, everybody had seen it.
Messages from Audrey appear in a chat window. "I now have a reputation that I can never get rid of. The whole school knows. My life is over." At the high school, students flow down the front steps.
The next week, she texted me around 12:30. There was like 4 or 5 texts, and one of them said, "I can't do this anymore." I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Can you pick me up?"
A view shows the front of the ranch-style house.
We pulled up to the house, and I said, "Just go inside and calm down, and we'll talk in a few minutes." She spent a lot of the day in her room on her computer, and I went to check on her, and I knocked on the door and I said, "Audrey, are you okay?"
Audrey's clothes hang on a rack.
And she said, "Nothing." So I popped open the door and I saw her, and she was hanging from the shower.
A framed photo shows Audrey as a little girl.
I cut her down.
She holds a doll in her lap.
And I tried to drag her out of the tub, and I couldn't get her all the way out. Maybe 3 minutes later, the paramedics were here. And I kept saying, "You've got to save her, you've got to save her."
In a photo, Sheila holds Audrey as a baby. A teenaged Audrey smiles with her mother in another picture. Two more show Audrey with her dad, first as a little girl, then as a teen.
I just literally raced to my car, beeline straight to the hospital. And the minute I walked in and saw her eyes, I knew she was gone.
He nods, his eyes shining with tears. In Audrey's room, a framed poster is on the wall above her bed, showing an iconic image of Audrey Hepburn. Outside, the pool's glassy surface ripples slightly, the water a muted green. Above the gates into the high school's football field, a sign reads, "Home of the Falcons." A view from the stands glides past the vacant field. Now, pale light glows on the horizon behind a mountain blanketed in trees.
Santa Clara County Sheriff's deputies arrived at Saratoga High School and arrested two teenaged boys. Each of them will be charged with two counts of felony and one count of misdemeanor sexual battery.
The photo not only made the event more terrible for Audrey, it will also be used as evidence against the boys now in custody.
This is not the first story we've told of this ilk. Teenagers, allegations of sex assault, cell phone photos, social media. It's starting to get to the point where we're losing track. What about all of the other...
Pismo Beach, California. A blonde carries a paddleboard.
My dad came home one night and said, Delaney, you need to turn on the news.
At the ocean's edge, she pulls on a wetsuit.
I remember turning on the news and hearing about this girl, and her name was Audrey Pott. And I remember thinking to myself, I need to talk to her. And my dad, like, looked at me and he said, you know, she committed suicide.
Delaney Henderson.
I know the exact feeling she felt.
She carries the board into the water.
Even after my assault, I still go through it sometimes of just self-shame and, you know, all these people are right what they're saying about me. She had only been going through this for a week and it had gotten so bad.
Standing on the board, Delaney paddles.
Like, if I had had one day and I could have just talked to her and, you know, let her know that I was there, that I'm going through what she's going through. And my dad was like, you know, but sometimes, like, it's just too late.
In the distance, a mountain range juts into a hazy sky.
I'm just lucky because it didn't work. When I tried to kill myself, it didn't work. And I remember thinking afterwards, why didn't I take more pills?
At home, she packs a box.
Like, the assault and the rape happened, but it was the after effect, I think, that was so much worse.
She seals a box with tape.
I mean, there was pictures forwarded all over Facebook, all over Twitter. There was hashtags created, like, Delaney Henderson's a slut.
Clothes overflow from a suitcase.
It got to the point where I was getting threats. The DA actually came to us and said, you know, you need to leave because these threats are getting so bad that we're afraid for your life. What about these? These two, right?
Yeah.
She packs an SUV.
Now we are finally moving to Florida. I mean, we can't get any farther than that. We're going from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean.
At the beach, a kite flies over waves as they roll to shore in rows of churning white water.
I wish that someone had contacted me when I had needed it, you know? Even just to send me a Facebook message.
People fish from shallow water.
The second I heard about Daisy, I looked at my mom and I said, I'm going to talk to her. I don't know how, I don't know where to even find her, but I need to talk to her.
On Delaney's social media page, a chat with Daisy Coleman pops up. Messages from Delaney read, Hey Daisy, my name is Delaney. A friend of mine told me about your story, and we realized how similar it was to my story. I was raped by two high school boys at age 16 at a party while I was under the influence. Now, a view glides over a small town amidst a rural landscape. Maryville, Missouri.
A senior at Maryville High School was charged today with sexual assault and endangering the welfare of a child after allegedly engaging in sex with an intoxicated 14-year-old girl. According to the Nottoway County Sheriff's Office, Matthew Barnett, age 17, faces charges in the alleged...
A second Maryville teen has been charged in a sex crimes investigation. 17-year-old Jordan Zeck is charged with felony sexual exploitation of a minor. According to court documents, he used a cell phone to make a video of a 14-year-old girl engaged in sexual acts...
Footage from a sheriff's interview plays.
Let's see. What's your birthday, man?
April 7th.
How old does that make you?
17.
Sitting across from the teenager at a small table, a man takes notes.
All right. I need to talk to you about the party that was at your house last night in the basement.
Matt avoids the man's gaze. Photos fill the screen, showing a blonde teenage girl with a bright smile and other shots of her with her hair dyed various colors. Text types out, Daisy.
January 7th. I remember it pretty vividly because that was the first ever wrestling tournament I had ever won. And I was pretty excited about it. I actually texted Jordan. I was like, we should hang out tonight. Let's play Call of Duty and drink a beer or two. Like, had some in my fridge. I was like, all right, well, let's do this. And he was like, I don't know, man. Matt keeps bugging me about coming over. I was like, all right, it's cool. Just don't worry about it. So I actually went to bed.
Charlie Coleman, Daisy's brother.
When I fell asleep, it was probably 10 o'clock. Daisy had her friend Paige over from Albany, and they were what I thought was watching movies and stuff, but they were actually up there drinking a little bit.
A photo shows Daisy with her brown-haired friend.
I met Paige when I was about 9 or 10. We kind of had the same dry sense of humor. We were kind of the weird kids, almost like the outcasts.
Now older, Daisy Coleman sits on a couch.
She was basically my best friend. So I really trusted her. I thought, like, we could try drinking alcohol together.
We had just been drinking in a room. I mean, not really doing a whole lot.
Paige Parkhurst.
I know we went through at least a water bottle of tequila and mixed that with some vodka and Red Bull.
And I started to feel really sick and dizzy. So I laid down for a little while.
Text messages appear above the town's glittering lights at night. From Maddie B, you want to come drink with me and chill? From Daisy, what you got, biatch? Maddie B, vodka. Daisy, who are you with? Maddie B, Nick, Zek, and Forney.
This guy started texting me, who's actually friends with my oldest brother. And him and a bunch of my brother's friends were drinking at his place in his basement. I was the freshman girl cheerleader. She was going to be a freshman. She was in eighth grade. So it was kind of like, oh, older boys think they want to hang out with us. Like, it was just one of those things. Like, if we did this, I bet we would be cool if we could, like, hang out with them and kind of thing.
A pencil touches to paper, held by fingers with chipped, fading black nail polish. Daisy sketches curtains on a window.
I think at the point that I did leave my house, I was drunk. Not like tipsy or buzz, but drunk. Which was hard for me to identify at the time because it was kind of like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like or is it supposed to be different? So it's just kind of like, let me add more fuel to this fire and see what happens.
In her on-camera interview, Daisy's wry smile fades to a rueful frown. Daisy adds darker lines to her sketch, which then fills in to become a bedroom.
We literally jumped out my window. We walked out to the car. They kind of drove to a neighborhood.
A drawing depicts the scene.
We had to walk through, like, a couple of backyards to get to his house, so you could kind of tell that he was, like, hiding it from his parents. And so we had to sneak in through the basement window.
In an animated drawing, the window opens.
There were five guys there. Matt, Cole, Nick, Jordan, and a younger friend of theirs that took Paige into Matt's sister's bedroom.
Pretty much, as soon as we got to the house, we were separated. I was taken into another room.
The drawing shows cups and bottles on a table.
Someone mentioned having me drink out of the bitch cup. If you drank so much, you were this tough or whatever. And since I have three brothers and it was guys kind of taunting me to do it, I kind of almost saw it as like a challenge. Like, yeah, I'll show you. I'm not just like a little girl kind of thing. Yeah. I drank all of that and had quite a few swigs straight from the bottle, which probably amounted to like 11 or 12 shots by that time. I remember a dog ran up on the couch and sat on my lap, and I said something really loudly about it, and they told me to quiet down, and that's literally like the last thing I remember, so.
In an animated drawing, a dog pants, then bounds away, leaving a hazy view of a room.
I was really drunk. Every time he tried to make a move, I'd always tell him no. A lot of times I had pushed his hands away, and I mean, I made it clear, very clear, that I didn't want to do this, but I was sexually assaulted.
Paige shrugs her hands and shakes her head.
I don't know. There's a lot more I wish I would have done, maybe fought back a lot harder, but then who knows what would have happened after that.
A drawing depicts a hazy view of four silhouetted guys.
When I was in the room, I could still hear them all in the living room talking, drinking. After that 5-10 minutes, it got quiet. That's when Matt took her into the room. It was quiet until I came back out.
A view glides from one closed door to the other.
I came back out, and they just told me to sit on the couch and wait. Whenever they opened the door, she was just kind of laying there, half sprawled on the bed, half on the floor. She couldn't talk. She couldn't move hardly at all. She was just completely incoherent. They had decided they're going to have to just pick her up and put her through the window because she couldn't walk. And then they pretty much dragged her to the car. They were freaking out in the car trying to figure out how they're going to drop us off without her brothers waking up. And they told me that it's all right, we'll sit here and watch her. All she has to do is sober up. They said just go inside and go sleep. And so I went inside, pretty much just blacked out.
Daytime. Barren trees line a frozen river, and brown grass covers lawns and fields.
Good morning, Maryville. It's a cold start to the day right now, only 21 degrees, getting up to an expected high of 44 this afternoon. Later tonight, expect temps to drop back down below freezing.
About 10 till 5 in the morning, I heard something outside.
Melinda Coleman, Daisy's mother.
And we got to the front door, and Daisy was laying in the yard. She had just sweatpants and a t-shirt on, and her hair was wet, and it was frozen to the ground.
Photos show the lawn.
And we carried her in and wrapped her in a blanket, and we were trying to warm her up. And she was not unconscious, but not really conscious. She couldn't speak. She couldn't really move or answer any questions. Then I panicked. I thought, oh my gosh, where's Paige? You know, is she out there somewhere?
I was being bombarded with questions and trying to figure out what was really going on. And I myself really didn't know what was going on at first.
So I started filling my tub up with like cool water, and I had started to kind of undress her, and I noticed that she was really, really red in places, like in her groin and thigh area. That was the thing that kind of made me think maybe something else had happened.
On a hospital report, sections are highlighted. Alleged or suspected sexual assault of a 14-year-old female.
So at that point, I went ahead and took Daisy to the hospital, and they did the exam.
She was apparently incapacitated.
They did the rape kits, and they talked to both Daisy and Paige at that time.
Small tear of perineum at introitus, small tear of skin below left labia.
We did do a blood alcohol level on her. It came back 134.9. I mean, it tells very clearly that at the time they dropped her in the yard, just based on half-life, she had to be close to comatose. She had to have been close to blood poison level.
Patient herself has no recollection.
By the time that they took me to the hospital, I just could not sort out what happened, really. So my story to the cops the first time was really, really, really hazy. I was probably pretty messed up still. I was really confused.
Daisy's phone was in the yard face down in the snow. One boot was next to it. Another boot was like 10 feet away. I dried the phone off on my pant leg and we started going through it. And the first name I saw on there was Maddie B. And I freaking knew that was Matt Barnett.
A yearbook page flips to a photo of Matt.
I knew that was something I wouldn't have put past Matt to try to have sex with my sister. But the fact that Nick and Cole were considered two of my best friends, and Jordan, like my teammate, like I wrestled that guy every single day. Like, how hard would it have been for Jordan to text me and say, "Why is your sister at Matt's?" But he didn't. Nick didn't. Cole didn't.
Charlie smiles with Nick in a photo.
I called Nick and I was like, "We gotta talk. I know you were there. What happened?" I drove to his house. sat outside and I texted him, like, I'm here. No reply. Called him. No reply. And I was livid. And I told Mom, I was like, you call the cops.
An evidence photo shows cruisers outside their house.
Because we were just outside of city limits. And it was literally, like, right on the line. So it was technically the sheriff's jurisdiction when we called the emergency number.
Now, a garage door lifts in the two-car garage of a well-kempt house. Two girls exit.
That side. I'm on this side?
Other side.
Oh. No, wait, I want to... Okay.
A man in uniform drives them.
600 North Mont, apartment 4 open 9.
You know, I guess it's a Midwestern thing, but around here, everybody's real big on the one-finger wave. You know, you just kind of...
Darren White, sheriff, Nottoway County. In the back seat, his daughters exchange a glance. The sheriff waves at cars.
A lot of these families have been here for generations and pretty well entrenched. You know, everybody's connected in one way or another. Of course, I always say you have to be really careful of who you're talking about because you never really know who they're related to. All right, see you later.
He pulls up to a school, and one daughter gets out.
You know, raising kids in a small town is really pretty great.
He drives.
Just having daughters is... I'm convinced that they're trying to kill me.
He waves at a passing van.
I was elected sheriff in 2008, and then was reelected in 2012. You know, not to sound like a Harry Truman cliche, but the buck really does stop here. There's nobody above the sheriff. You know, it's safe to walk down these sidewalks at night and you don't have to worry about, you know, somebody jumping out from the bushes and hitting you on the head and taking your wallet. We don't want to fool ourselves into thinking that we don't have things that go on here, but we take a pretty proactive approach and try to deal with things swiftly.
An American flag waves beside the Nottoway County Jail.
Something that comes in as a sexual assault certainly raises your ire.
The sheriff heads inside.
Based upon the information that was given by the girls, we had a list of names of people that had been at this house. We were able to round them up, bring them in, and we went from there.
David Glidden, Captain, Nottoway County.
Why don't you tell me about the party last night in your basement.
There was three guys there to begin with.
Okay, who was that?
I give names out.
Okay, that's fine.
And we're all just chilling there, just watching Netflix. But I'm assuming that it's about yeah.
Okay.
She came over, she texted me, wanted to hang out, and she came over, and we picked them up, and...
Them?
She had a friend with her, I don't know her friend's name.
Okay, that's cool.
And then we came back to my house and just chilled there for a little bit, but they've been drinking at their house,
at house.
And then when she got there, I started hanging out for a while. She got really bad, started to cry, and then she wanted to get home. And when they were bringing her home, she was just crying, and she didn't want to walk or anything.
Right.
So we brought her out there and sat on the side.
Right.
And she said she would take care of her, sleep her, and she was just going to stay there until she starts feeling better.
Well, that's cool. Inside. Yeah, you got them safely home, that's good.
Photos labeled evidence show Matt's basement. In one, empty soda bottles and other trash are strewn on the floor.
When you picked her up at her house, was she drunk?
I won't say drunk. I
said buzzed.
She was, yeah, buzzed.
Did she drink some at your house?
She had a little bit.
Alcohol?
Yeah,
in your basement. Okay, yeah, that's cool.
I'm not here to throw
stones. I'm just trying to get to the bottom line.
Yeah, I think she only had like two shots.
At your house?
Yeah.
An evidence photo shows a bottle of rum on the rug.
All right. Here's the other question. Who had sex with And listen to me. Please, please, please be honest.
I did.
You did? Anybody else? Where did you and have sex at in the house?
No.
Did she ever say she didn't want to have sex with you?
No.
Was she drunk out of her mind?
When I was with her, whenever I had sex now, this was before she started drinking at my house.
I understand.
A photo shows men's underwear on a rug.
Who else was there? Bubba, it's time to talk and name names.
Cole Forney, Nick Gavinas, and Jordan Zick. What's their names?
But you do know her name.
Yeah.
Because a minute ago you didn't know her name.
More photos show the other bedroom and panties on the floor.
Let me ask you something. The other girl, you didn't know her from Adam, and you saw her walking down the street and you just looked at her. How old would you say she is?
I'm 14.
You think she looks 14?
Yeah.
I think she looks about 8. Do you know how old you are?
She told me she was like 14.
The girl you had sex with told you she was 14?
A news headline reads, suspect charged in teen sex case. With the sheriff.
From the time of call to victims interviewed, suspects interviewed, people in jail, we're talking about 4 hours. That's pretty darn quick.
Elsewhere, about a dozen men hang out by picnic tables in grass near the side of a road. With sunglasses perched above his cap's brim, Charlie tosses a baseball.
Monday, we went to school, and it was 180 from that Friday, the Friday before. It was one school divided.
A guy waits as Charlie throws the ball to him, then catches it and tosses it back.
It was weird because I always sat at a table filled with people like my teammates, people I thought were my friends. I had absolutely nobody. No one.
He wears a disbelieving smile.
I was one of the athletes. I was all conference and all district and sports. And once all that happened, that was all taken from me in like an instant. Like, I was now known as Daisy's brother.
In a home video from March 30th, 1997, a pink flag hangs from a pole on a house's exterior. It reads, "It's a girl."
And it's a girl. Catherine Daisy.
In another video, Michael Coleman holds his daughter.
Get your mother.
He extends the toddler toward the camera.
Get your mother.
Mike was actually an electrical engineer when I met him. And I was in vet school, and he told me he had always wanted to be a doctor. So for the next, 4 years of med school, internship, and then residency, I supported the family and had babies every 20 months, pretty much.
In another home video,
Sissy eating ice cream.
Michael feeds Daisy.
Mom.
The two-year-old smiles.
Before my dad died, I always remembered thinking that he's never gonna die. Like, he's too big and strong to die. Like, literally nothing's gonna happen to him.
And there's the birthday girl. Cheese. I'll love this 20 years from now, just seeing what I'm seeing, a close-up of a Daisy.
The little girl smiles.
I was about 9 at the time, and we were heading to a wrestling tournament. Some black ice had frozen over the night before, so when we drove over it, my dad lost total control of the wheel, and we ended up upside down in a ravine.
Another video shows Michael horsing around with his kids.
When we got to the hospital, I sat there for probably 2-3 hours. I was just waiting for one of those Disney movie fantasies to come to life where he woke up, but he never did.
A framed photo displays the family. Now in her bedroom, Daisy sketches a giant cross at the side of a road. Her hair is dyed black, and a septum piercing shines in her nose.
At first, it was just shock for a while. And each of them had a tough year. And with Daisy, she was so close to her dad. She was such a daddy's girl. He would always rock her to sleep, and she would always sit on his lap in the chair in the morning, and I worried a lot about how she would handle it.
Daisy smudges the pencil in her sketch.
Not that we wanted to erase the memory or not have pictures and stuff, but it was hard to go by the place in the road where he'd been killed and his old practice, which was now an administrative building.
A cross stands at the site of the accident.
We decided it would be good to just not be living with ghosts all the time.
With a pink and yellow sky behind it, a green arrow-shaped sign reads, Albany, and points to the left.
So the plan was to go somewhere not too far away and not so much larger that it would be a shock to the kids, and where they could still come back and visit their friends.
A water tower with Maryville on it stands beyond a field of grain.
After Dad died, we looked around and looked around at places, and the decision to move to Maryville, it fit like a shoe. Like, it was everything we could ask for.
Sun shines over the town.
It was about an hour from Albany. It was small, but it was also big enough that everybody didn't know everything about you.
A man rides a lawnmower past a goalpost.
The football team had just won state that year, so I knew I was going to get to play football for a powerhouse program. And I kind of fell in love with the entire thing. I was my own person finally, and none of it had to do with anything bad that had ever happened before.
He heaves a breath. On the football field, players break through a sign held by cheerleaders. During the game, the quarterback completes a pass.
Last year, the high school, the university, the junior high, junior varsity, nobody lost a football game. We were like 60-0 for the year. This gets really hokey, but that's small town America, and that's where we are, and I guess that's what I am, and I'm proud of it.
Jim Fall, Mayor, Maryville, 2013 to 2014. Now, Daisy's mom sutures a dog.
It just felt like a fresh start and kind of a weight lifted.
Okay, sweetie.
A woman tends to the sedated animal. In Melinda's car, a stethoscope hangs from the rearview mirror.
It's kind of empowering in a way to have to support the whole family and the triumphs, the feeling strong.
At home, Melinda carries groceries to the fridge.
We were pretty happy there for a while.
A view glides around the Maryville Water Tower, taking in the surrounding neighborhoods. In a batting cage by a baseball field, Charlie tosses a ball to his friend.
Good.
The batter swings at another ball.
Right when things start getting better, Daisy's sexual assault case happened, and Maryville being that kind of blessing to me and my family, just, it really did kind of dissolve in an overnight fashion.
A newspaper headline, local teens accused of sexual assault. A glimpse of the article reads, one person has received a conviction, a 15-year-old who admitted to raping the 13-year-old in Mr. Barnett's basement that night.
You know how like Jay-Z, it's like J-A-Y-Z? Yeah. I'm doing that, but with a D. Oh. So it's like Daisy.
Oh. Paige arranges letters on a shirt.
Where are the scissors?
Daisy irons her letters.
Quit your whining. I'll buy you a t-shirt with some glitter letters, and all you do is complain. I pay for your school. I feed you, clothe you, put a roof over your head, and all I hear is nagging.
Robin Borland, Paige's mother.
For Paige, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword for her. The juvenile that assaulted Paige went to court, and the judge asked him if he had raped Paige, and he said yes. He said, was she intoxicated? And he said yes. He said, did she tell you no? And he said yes. He was the only one out of the whole bunch that admitted what he did, and I think it was probably healing for her to hear that.
Don't be shady.
The negative is she carried around a lot of guilt about what happened to Daisy. Oh.
Daisy wears a green, black, and white cheerleading uniform.
Ah, success.
With some of her hair dyed dark, she peels back the cloth over her iron-on letters, which read, Daisy.
I was just in kind of total shock. Like, I thought something bad would never happen to me. That after my dad died, like, I already had my deal of grief in life. I get to just live a life where I'm invincible now. Like, and that's just a stupid teenage thought. We really aren't invincible.
Daisy runs on the track around the Albany High School football field.
People really were kind of like verbally attacking me. A lot of people would just say things like calling me a liar. I was told not to say anything because it could just mess with the case. Like, I really wanted to stand up for myself because not very many people were standing up for me.
In a workout room, Charlie grabs 45-pound dumbbells off a rack of weights and does curls with each arm.
One day, my sister was walking to class in the hallway from the bathroom. This kid in my class, he decided he was going to call her a lying slut and yell it outside of the door. And she heard it, and she ran back to the bathroom crying. I can't tell you what kind of things ran through my mind. I said something to him, along the lines of, don't you ever say anything to her again. And I knew for a fact he's a little weenie bag. Like, he would have been easy to kick the crap out of.
Leaning forward on a machine support bar, he uses both hands to perform T-bar rows, lifting 3 weight plates.
It's kind of rumor, like there was no for sure about it, but I found out from the grapevine that there was a video.
Writing on a wall reads, "What are you willing to endure?"
One of the few people I still talk to had seen it and heard about it being passed around. He said that it was kind of blurry and it was really dark.
In front of a mirror, he does barbell rows.
And then it got more graphic and him on top of her, and she was just kind of like limp and not really functioning very well.
Charlie wears a determined look as he lifts. Stylized letters on another wall read, "Monsters are made, not born." Now, the muscular young man rests, sitting at the end of a workout bench.
He guaranteed I didn't want to see it, and if I did, that bad things would happen.
Charlie takes a deep breath, then licks his lips, averting his gaze. Another police interview shows a bespectacled teenage boy.
I know I'm not as young and as sharp and as smart as you young guys, mm-hmm. but I'm also not stupid. I do not ask questions that I don't know the answer to.
Okay.
Tell me about the video.
Nick Ramudis.
All right, well, there was a video. It was deleted. I didn't take it. My friend did. It was like 5 or 10 seconds long.
Who took the video?
Jordan.
With Jordan Zeck.
Anyways, we were just sitting there watching TV while they were in the room, and we just wanted to know what they were doing. The lights were on in there, and I didn't know what was going on, so cracked the door open like he said. Nick gave me his phone. I took the video.
With Nick.
Was there any of them nudity on the video?
Their pants were both off.
Okay. You forgot this part when you were here before?
Well, kind of.
And then you went and deleted it off your phone.
Yeah, because I didn't really want that on there.
Yeah, I really don't blame you. Who all watched the video?
Me, Jordan, Matt, and Cole.
Watched it?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to keep your phone. No choice.
Glidden picks the cell phone up and presses a button.
I don't know how to shut this thing off, and I'm going to ask you to shut it off.
Nick swipes across the phone screen, then takes a long time thumbing at it. Glidden walks over to watch him.
Within 4 hours of getting the initial call, that phone was in evidence.
Nick turns off the phone.
The phone was sent to the forensic laboratory in Kansas City. Their report came back, said that whatever was on that phone was deleted, and that through the magic of Apple computers, when they say delete, they mean delete. It's not like a regular computer or an Android phone where you can go back.
A deputy works near the sheriff.
Where you can go back, move.
The deputy leaves.
And you can piece stuff back together on a hard drive. When they say delete, they mean delete. All the people that are saying that there's a video out there, all the people that are saying that they saw a video, there's no nice way to say it, they're liars. You know, unfortunately, you have a lot of people involved in this that are running around telling a lot of stories, you know, and without pointing fingers, it serves to benefit people's causes by making a lot of things up that really didn't happen and really doesn't exist. But don't underestimate the need for attention, especially young girls. There's a lot of pressure on young girls in our society to be pretty, to be liked, to be the popular one, all of those things. And it's not fair, but it is how our society works.
Text appears. Recorded phone call.
This is Darren.
Hi.
Hi, Darren. This is Melinda Coleman.
How are you today?
Oh, doing all right. How are you?
I'm all right.
I guess I haven't heard anything at all.
I don't know what's going on at all with any of the case, and I just kind of wanted to stay in the loop if that was all right.
Well, it's in the court system. They've all been arraigned, so now there'll be hearings and more hearings and more hearings. So court things can drag out, and it can take literally months.
All right, and as far as the cell phone, that the video is not retrievable, you guys couldn't get anything out of that at all?
No, nothing at all.
Okay.
I'm sure that you'll have more questions at some point. Feel free to call, okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
In an on-camera interview, Melinda's hair is now short.
I actually called the sheriff and the prosecutor, and they told me everything was great. They had everything, not to worry. It would be in court for several more months. Came home from work, stopped at the grocery store, and Robin, the mother of the other girl that was assaulted, called me and said, Melinda, they dropped all the charges today.
Lightning flashes from a blanket of gray clouds.
Charges are dropped against two Maryville teens accused in a sexual assault case. The Nottoway County prosecutor dismissed a felony sexual assault charge against Matthew Barnett and a felony exploitation of a minor charge against Jordan Zeck. Rice says he did not believe he could prove the allegations against the teens beyond a reasonable doubt.
We did have all the medical and all the information where we could make a decision based on the evidence, and I am absolutely convinced it was the right call to do, and it was the right decision to dismiss it.
Robert Rice, prosecutor, Nottoway County.
You know, they're just lying. Initially, I thought it was only the boys, but I think it goes deeper than that. I think it's political.
A view drifts over downtown Maryville, where a stately brick building's clock tower juts into the sky.
You know, the Barnetts are well-known in Northwest Missouri. The grandpa is a former state representative, former state highway patrolman. And, you know, I hate to say that that had anything to do with it, but I really think it did.
A sign at a building's entrance reads, City Hall. Inside, framed photos of the town adorn the walls.
In a small town, in a small area, everybody's related. Everybody is somehow connected. And I think when you're, you know, in law enforcement, it's a little bit harder sometimes to separate yourselves.
At a football game, a Maryville player scores a touchdown.
It became more important to shield the boys than it did to find justice for the girls. The one that is kind of the banner for your community, you don't want to see them in trouble. You don't want to think those things about them. They're the heroes of small towns.
The Maryville players crowd together.
I guess the wrong, if I want to say wrong, boy raped her.
A view from above shows the Maryville football field with hounds written at each end zone.
One of the parts that people have really blown out of proportion in this entire case is that everybody wants to throw the word rape out there. It's very popular. The rape, the Maryville rape, the Coleman rape. Nothing that occurred that night ever rose to the level of the elements of the crime of rape. Whether we agree with this or not, the people of that age in the state of Missouri can have consensual sex. Forcible compulsion is the primary component of the crime of rape. And you know, it's just not there.
So forcible compulsion doesn't apply if you have sex with somebody who is unconscious or semi-conscious?
Well, see, now that's a whole another
element for lawyers and legislators and people like that to figure out.
Kevin Collison, Kansas City Star.
A couple of other media, some of them fairly significant, had already written about it, but when we reported it and it was picked up in the world of social media, that's when this erupted into a firestorm and all this pressure suddenly developed.
Comments on the website: justice in Nottoway County is notoriously skewed. The whole town is crooked. What a tragedy. Prosecutor Rice to be fired along with the sheriff. The people of Maryville are getting exactly what they deserve. Text appears. Anonymous video. Hashtag OpMaryville.
Two young girls have been raped in the town of Maryville, Missouri. Another high school football star, the grandson of a Missouri state official, has walked free. How do the residents of Maryville sleep at night?
Various news reports play.
Online activist group Anonymous has called for an investigation on how the case was handled. Demonstrators will gather here at the county courthouse next week.
Tonight, Missouri's lieutenant governor is urging the state's attorney general and a county prosecutor to convene a grand jury to revisit a controversial case that was dismissed last year.
You know, I don't know if the whole nation needed to be involved in it. I would have just liked to get the attention of a few people so that way something could have been done with it.
In a news report.
I talked to people here in town and people at the school, and in both locations, people were very leery about talking to me on camera about this case.
Jim Fall, the former mayor.
Well, it was Friday when you had the square down here on the corner full of people lecturing about what a hellhole this is, you know. They didn't know. We know who we are and what we are, and we're comfortable with that. The picture that was painted of us, I don't think that's what we are.
More news clips.
All you have to do is Google Maryville, and you're going to find hundreds of posts. Many around here with whom I spoke say they're not very happy with what they're reading. In fact, they feel attacked and even threatened.
But what did she expect to happen at 1 a.m. in the morning after sneaking out? There are telltale signs of this girl actually lying.
Paige Parkhurst.
It made the whole town split up into sides. It was the people that believed Daisy against the Barnetts and their group of people that were very, very vicious.
A woman at a rally uses a megaphone.
When an injustice happens to one in the community, an injustice happens to the community. Daisy and Paige, we are here for you today.
People in the crowd hold daisies.
New developments tonight in a teenage rape investigation in Maryville, Missouri that has grabbed headlines nationwide. The Jackson County Prosecutor's Office has been put in charge of taking a second look at the case.
I was more than excited. I felt like I was going to be able to work with someone who was actually excited about this case and willing to put forth a real effort.
In City Hall, brochures for county services and attractions stand on a table.
20 years ago, we built a 1,000-acre lake that has become an area recreational draw and a championship golf course and one of the 100 best fishing places in the country. And does anybody come and report that? No. But this comes up and here it unloads on you.
A pristine white business card with a gold Jackson County, Missouri seal on it reads, Gene Peters Baker, Jackson County Prosecutor.
Whenever you get a phone call here, someone says, Judge so-and-so is calling, you hang up on the phone call you're already on and you take the judge's call.
She walks on a treadmill as she types.
And the judge tells me his name and then he tells me he's from Nottoway County. And I just... my heart kind of sunk a little bit because I thought, oh, I bet I know why you're calling.
Paperwork reads, State of Missouri, Plaintiff versus Matthew B. Barnett, Defendant.
When the case is built on the testimony of the victim, those can be very, very hard. And so I tried to collect additional evidence.
A view glides over Daisy's sexual assault exam.
There was nothing about the rape kit I had available to me that really gave us another aha moment. We tried to go back and find the phone. You know, did it exist? Did it exist at one time? Could we still get it? We were unsuccessful in that regard.
Nick's interview shows the captain taking his phone.
What was the state of the case
when it was handed to you? In your professional opinion.
I just don't think I want to answer that question.
Her lips tighten into a line, and she nods. Outside the courthouse, reporters wait by a stand which holds a handful of microphones for news outlets.
So, at the end of that investigation, I believed that we got as far as the evidence would take us.
She exits the courthouse, followed by the sheriff.
Sometimes that doesn't tell a full story. But in this case, I believed the charge that I was able to go forward on, I knew that I had the evidence to try.
She stands at the microphones.
Mr. Burnett pled guilty to endangering the welfare of a child in the second degree. In this case, there was insufficient evidence to go forward on a sexual assault.
The graphic reads, sentenced to 2 years probation for endangerment charge.
These are very hard cases. The facts are hard, often. The legal requirements can be very hard, and very hard to meet.
In her on-camera interview, she nods, shifting her lips to the side. At the courthouse, the prosecutor heads back inside.
When Jean Baker came out with the verdict, it just was really stressful. We were, you know, waiting to see what was going to happen, what they were going to find in the investigation, and if anything was going to be done. So when it finally came out that it was just going to be probation, it was hard to deal with.
A headline, the case is closed. No rape charges in Maryville, Missouri case.
As near as I can tell, the boys are the only ones that have decided that they want to put this behind them and try to move on with their lives and try to make something of themselves. I think that all of them, with the exception of the one that's a juvenile who's still in high school, and I think that he's doing just fine, but I think all of the boys are going to college and working and trying to do better. And this is one of the real fatal flaws of our society, is that it's always the boys. And it's not always the boys. The girls have as much culpability in this world as boys do. So, you know, everybody has to take their part of it, and everybody has to do better.
A subtitle. I absolutely agree. In this particular case, though, the crimes were committed by boys. The sheriff lifts his brow.
Were they?
Text types out, superimposed over different shots of the town. We should all be thankful that justice prevailed. Hashtag Jordan and Matt are free. Hashtag Jordan and Matt are free. Fuck yeah, that's what you get for being a skank. Smiley face. Sorry. Hashtag I hate Daisy. Hope she gets what's coming. School's back to normal because hashtag Jordan and Matt are free.
After the charges were dropped.
It was just really one thing after another, like all the drama with the social media, and then I was getting in fights. I hated going to school. I hated going out in public. I couldn't handle anymore.
I wanted to fight back with everyone, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted them to believe me.
Daisy posts on social media, "Dear guys, being a dick isn't going to make yours bigger." And some people just need a high five to the face with a chair. More text hovers in the sky above homes all over town. I'm actually laughing right now. Hashtag Daisy is a liar. Those girls are filthy whores. Hashtag trailer park future. They aren't rapists. Hashtag whore. Shout out to all the retarded people who believe all the bullshit stories a certain family made up. Now that hashtag Jordan and Matt are free, you can F off.
You already have this wound just ripped clean open and you're vulnerable and you're going through a really hard time, and to have all these people attacking you on top of it, it almost makes the bullying seem more extreme.
Daisy is lucky she moved schools. Hashtag Jordan and Matt are free. Hashtag I hate Daisy. Hashtag Daisy is a liar. Hashtag Matt 1, Daisy 0. She admitted she offered sexual favors for booze. She is equally to blame in this case. Hope she realizes this just made her look stupid and not get sympathy. Enough said. Hashtag Jordan and Matt are free.
You begin to believe that all these bad things they're saying about you are actually true. So your image of yourself completely changes and you kind of become a shell of yourself. You almost see that, you know, doing away with yourself is the only way to fix things, which isn't the truth at all, but it's all you can truly see when you're sitting in a dark corner and you're not looking around at the light.
A view of houses through a window refocuses on the window's shattered glass.
Afterwards, with all the backlash, we started having issues with vandalism of the house. We had issues with people threatening to beat up the kids.
We see a house's exterior walls.
I lost my job because of the case.
The home's interior is gutted.
Then we had our house burned down in Maryville.
The destroyed dwelling no longer has a roof.
It was just...
In other parts of the house, only the foundation slabs remain.
Really, really hard to believe.
Melinda nods, her eyes filled with tears. At night, a car's headlights glow in the darkness. They illuminate the wooden cross for Daisy's father at the side of the road as the car passes.
We moved back to Albany because we still had the house here, and I thought at least the kids would be safe.
Sitting at a table in a hotel room, Daisy sketches on a pad. She wears a loose knitted hat over her dyed black hair and a gray jacket. Posing her left hand in a fist beside the pad, she draws it.
Daisy was strong in the beginning, but then it just starts to wear you down, and she just got really into a dark place.
Daisy draws a black semicolon just below the fist on the inside of the wrist.
She started to really feel like it was her fault and feel like she should have done something different, and she just internalized all the negativity. She dyed her hair black, she shaved part of her head. She burned herself.
Melinda touches a trembling hand to her lips, then nods tearfully.
And every door in the house upstairs is broken because we've had to kick it in to save her when she's tried to overdose.
One of Daisy's sketches shows a girl hanging from a noose on a tree. Another displays a girl's face, half of it a sunken skull with only wisps of hair. Cursive below the skull's chin reads, "We're all a little dead inside." The drawing now appears on Daisy's photo sharing page. Posted below is a photo of a blonde Daisy with the text, "Sometimes I wonder why I try." Text with a photo of her with brown hair reads, "Maybe we should just give up." An image posted later shows her with black hair and a bruise around her eye. "Tell me about how everything in this world is my fault." Beside a photo of an IV in her arm, it reads, "When I'm gone, who are you to mourn?" In another image, she wears a Maryville spoof hound shirt. "You've lost everything. You're living a nightmare." A photo of her ear displays a needle pierced through the scapha. "I'm tired of losing all I love." In another image, she holds a scrap of paper with a smile drawn on it in front of her mouth. "And if I jump, just let me sink, please." A more recent post reads, "Kiss my closing eyes, help me sleep." In a posted sketch, a girl holds up her wrist, which is marred with cuts. The pressure to be perfect is much stronger than the love in this world. The images and text recede and fade into a black background as one line of white text comes into focus at the center. "Out of all the things, why did I become this?" In a chat window to Daisy, Delaney writes, "I've gotten the same threatening texts, Facebook posts, emails, scary encounters, and dealt with the same emotions of wanting everything to end. I just want you to never feel alone again. I'm here." Daisy replies, "Thank you, it means so much." Delaney writes, "Cannot wait to meet you soon," with 3 exclamation points and a smiley face emoticon. Outside a motel, text reads, "Washington, D.C. Daisy knocks on a room's door. She enters.
So where exactly are you?
She wipes a young woman's wrist with a cotton pad.
Make sure you're good.
Sitting across from her, Daisy rests the young woman's hand on her leg while she moves the needle of her tattoo machine over her wrist. Daisy skillfully tattoos a black semicolon on her skin.
She's
Later, the young woman holds Delaney's hand while the blonde Californian gets the semicolon tattooed on the side of her left middle finger.
Finally, meeting Daisy, I learned...
Delaney Henderson.
...that, you know, it was a reassurance to me that I'm not alone.
Delaney smiles through her wince as Daisy tattoos her.
Oh, that feels fantastic. Holy crap. This is a semicolon Daisy tattooed on me, and it basically is a reminder to myself that my story is never over. You know, it's not over yet, and that it's just like a sentence, you know, like when you're writing a sentence or typing a sentence, a semicolon means like, you know, that's not the end.
Daisy joins a group of women.
Can I give you a hug? I'm Angela.
Angela Rose, survivor advocate.
Thank you so much for coming.
A different woman hugs Daisy's mom.
This is really an unprecedented thing, to bring these women together and their moms that collectively had made such a difference. I know that this is scary, but that's why we need to get our stories and our experiences out there for other moms and other high school survivors so they know that they're not alone and that this happens a lot.
Whoever wants to share first?
Okay. I guess I'll go. Okay, well, basically, when I was 16, my parents went out of town, and I had two girlfriends that were supposedly spending the night, and I did not know, but they invited three boys over, two of which I had never met before. And we were all smoking weed, and I had never done that before. After a while, I remember everything just got really, like, uneven. So I got up and I went to my room, and the two boys followed me in, and they had locked the door. I was really confused and didn't really know what was going on, and they sexually assaulted me. Then...
She blinks back tears.
Then I found out that the same guy had sexually assaulted another girl 8 months later. That part's really hard. And of course, I felt guilty because if I had reported it, it wouldn't have happened to the other girl. And she was 14.
Ella, Newport Beach, California.
I don't really remember much, but I got up and tried to leave, and they punched me, knocked me out, cracked my jaw, and I was unconscious for 6 hours, and they both just continuously raped me for 6 hours until I woke up. And then, yeah, I walked home in bloody clothes the next day.
I was just laid out, passed out on the floor while the 18-year-old was on top of me. They took pictures.
Jada, Houston, Texas. Beside her, her mother wipes her eyes. A tear slides down Jada's cheek, and her mom hands her a napkin.
I'm sorry. They took pictures. They posted it online, and...
Listening, Daisy nods.
We reported it as soon as it happened, and it took them forever. And we had to report it again.
Now the group watches Daisy.
And then everything just went black, and then I remember waking up in my yard, half frozen, and trying to make it to the door. And I remember not being able to feel my feet, and I remember having this really vivid dream, almost like I was lucid dreaming or something, that my dad was just like, hey, you gotta get up and go inside. But no one really believed me. It's unbelievable what people will say about you and what, you know, how the truth gets hidden when so many people don't believe you. And even now, I fight every single day trying to convince myself that what I did was right and what I'm still doing is right. So, I mean, just having Daisy and Ella and Jada, like, that's how I feel, like we are an army. So I'm glad I have all of you guys here today.
The young women exchange encouraging smiles. Angela watches with a pleased look. Elsewhere, Daisy runs the needle of her tattoo machine along skin, her eyes focused and her lips moving slightly as she works. She spritzes the raw, ink-marked skin, then wipes it down.
I think Daisy's coping with things a lot better. We've gotten her into some intensive counseling.
Daisy continues working on a young man's tattoo.
She's still that sweet girl, but she's like a hedgehog. She's got the quills, and she'll poke you with them before you ever get to anything soft.
The young man getting the tattoo lies shirtless, face down on a bed.
It's sad, but I'm sure not scooping her up off the bathroom floor, running her to the ER on my shoulder anymore, and that in itself is a blessing to me.
Charlie drops his gaze for a moment. As Daisy works on the tattoo, a guy watches from nearby. Daisy lifts her gaze to a drawing taped to a window and studies it. In the sketch, interwoven tendrils form a cross-like shape. Sunlight glints off the once frozen river, where lush greenery now spills over the banks.
Dear Lord, battles we go through in life.
Battles we go through life.
Give us a chance that's fair.
Give us a chance that's fair.
Chance to earn our stripes.
Chance to earn our stripes.
We should win.
We should win.
Let it be by the code.
Let it be by the code.
We should lose.
We should lose.
We stand by our road.
Stand by our road.
Day by day.
Day by day.
We get better and better.
We get better and better.
Till we can't be beat.
Till we can't be beat.
Won't be beat.
Won't be beat.
Go, boys.
Go, boys.
A circle of Little League players rises.
Signs. Do we all remember the signs?
Charlie coaches them.
Yeah. All right, yeah, three hard steps. Any questions? Any at all? All right. Get focused. Let's go.
In the outfield, pairs of players toss balls to each other.
Honestly, I'd never picture myself being a Little League coach. When they asked me to do it the first time, I kind of rolled my eyes like, they're not going to stand a chance. I'm going to make them run. And, you know, you bond with those kids.
Charlie watches a pitcher throw to one of his players. The kid races to first.
Go.
A player fields the ball and tosses it, then clutches his hat's brim disappointedly.
I don't think I ever thought about teaching them greater life lessons until I had heard a couple boys making comments about a girl, and I said, all right, we're having a powwow now. And I circled everybody up, and I was like, here's the thing, guys. I'm here to teach you baseball, but this isn't the kind of stuff I accept. This isn't what I'm about. If it's what you're about, that's fine, but that's not what we are going to be about, and you are more than welcome to take yourself out of here. After that one incident, something clicked. It really did click.
Charlie watches a player lead off first base.
I don't look to be their father or anything, but I thought, I want to be part of something bigger than myself.
The player sprints to second.
And maybe I could kind of help them along.
Down!
The kid slides as the pitcher throws to second. Parents watch attentively.
There you go.
A player slides across home plate.
I really just enjoy watching them grow because in the process they help me. They teach me a lot more about myself and how I was at that age. And I guess I really start to understand a lot more.
Sitting by the third baseline, Charlie watches his team's pitcher.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Way to help yourself. Way to help yourself, Johnny.
With the opposing team now on the field, the setting sun colors the sky pale pink and purple. A daytime view glides over the California suburb toward the mountains beyond. In town, a sign above a parking lot reads, Saratoga Village Center. In a sun-dappled cemetery, Amanda Lay and Sheila Pott make their way to a grave.
We said our goodbyes to Audrey.
Sheila lays flowers on the gravestone.
But, I mean, we kept thinking, you know, what could have been so bad that would have driven her to this? After the night of the sexual assault, her communications were captured on Facebook Messenger. Sometimes the person tormenting her was faceless or nameless.
Amanda and Audrey's mom picnic in the grass.
We know from what she said in her process of investigating her own crime that she felt, because of what had happened to her, her reputation was ruined, and it was ruined forever. She didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel, any future.
Writing on a wall at the school reads, Saratoga High School, established 1959. Larry Pott, Audrey's father.
The boys were 15 at the time.
They were convicted of having child pornography and committing sexual battery, multiple felonies for each boy.
In the gym, old streamers hang limply.
One of them got 30 days, one of them got 45 days. It was non-consecutive, it was weekend only, basically weekend detention. They were never suspended or expelled. We pretty much knew that as juveniles, they were gonna get a slap on the wrist.
The Potts meet with lawyers.
I should give you the terms and we can go over them right now. Sure. Number one, the boys admit the allegations as contained in the respected criminal complaints that pertain to Audrey Pott.
The second term was that their written apology is public. They're sorry for the family's loss, and they basically go through all the things that were important to Larry and Sheila. The amazing thing about this is, had we have gone to a trial, we would never have been able to get the result that we got. And who knows how you would be...
We brought the wrongful death suit because we knew that we weren't going to get justice in the juvenile court. I felt that in the civil suit, at least, it would be public and people would know what really happened.
It was about them taking responsibility and accountability for their actions. But ultimately, for us, it was about clearing Audrey's name.
Yes. Something very wrong happened here. It shouldn't happen to anyone else. And the only reason we all know, because Audrey was extremely private, that we could have brought it forward is because she's not with us anymore. I think more so than ever before, this subject is out there and people are talking about it. And this has to stop.
Writing on a document reads, Superior Court of California, County of Santa Clara. Sheila Pott and Lawrence Pott, plaintiffs, versus John B. and John R., defendants.
Part of our settlement in the lawsuit was to have a 45-minute interview with you guys here.
Highlighted words rise from the document.
We had to, we had to plead stuff in order for me to graduate high school.
Audrey wasn't conscious. Audrey did not consent.
I've definitely learned from all this. I mean, there is a lot.
Audrey did not deserve.
A lot of different things that guys and girls think.
What have you learned about girls?
Girls, the gossip, really. There's a lot of gossip between girls and, guys are more laid back and don't really care.
Text reads, apologize for false rumors.
So that's what I've learned, for sure.
Views of the town at night and the football field pass by.
I'm curious if there was a moment during that night when you knew this has gone too far. Was there a moment like that for you?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Well, I don't know. I've kind of always been unhappy after that. I mean, it's nothing. It wasn't right, and I knew that. I mean, at the time, there was drinking involved, and it's not like we thought everything was okay. I mean, nothing was okay, but I've always felt, like, not okay about it, like, every day or so. I don't know what I really thought back then, but I just never imagined anything like what happened now. I don't know. I didn't imagine my whole life to be changed, and yeah, I don't know, like forever changed, so.
The screen fades to black. Under bright daylight, cows graze on a green field in a rural landscape. In Albany High School's gymnasium, a crowd gathers in chairs facing a stage and podium. Charlie shakes a man's hand as he heads to his seat in the audience. Text appears. Daisy's high school graduation, May 17, 2015. As a band plays, Daisy waits in a line with her classmates, wearing a white cap and gown.
Personally, I don't know what has happened with the boys since that night. But I have a feeling that, you know, since they haven't had to go through as much crap as I have, that they haven't really had time to reflect on who they are as people, or else they would have stepped forward and taken responsibility.
The graduating students stand facing the stage.
Honestly, at this point in my life, I can't even recognize the person I was 4 years ago.
Flowers adorn the top of Daisy's cap.
At one point in time, I just wanted revenge, and that's all I wanted and stuff. But I mean, it's a lot harder just living your life full of hate and everything. So I just figured at one point I was like, I'm kind of done with just being mad at everyone and being mad all the time and just being like a big ball of emotion. Like, I want to be happy and I want to move on with my life. So that's just kind of what I did. I mean, and that doesn't always mean just like forgetting the past. It just kind of means forgiving the past.
Daisy waits by stairs up to the stage.
Daisy Coleman is a recipient of an athletic scholarship from Missouri Valley College.
On stage, Daisy poses briefly as she receives her diploma, then crosses the stage and descends. Daisy's mom watches with tears in her eyes. Now, a crowd gathers in chairs on one side of a football field. Saratoga High School graduation, June 4, 2015. In caps and gowns, students file into seats on the field. From the audience, a person snaps a photo.
The class of 2015 awards an honorary diploma to Audrey Taylor Pott.
Sitting in the bleachers, Audrey's mom smiles tearfully and wraps an arm around the young woman sitting beside her. The graduates toss their caps into the air. Now, a view travels on a highway, passing under a sign for Interstate 395 North to Washington. Daisy stares out her window as she rides with her mom. Later, they arrive at a hotel. Delaney, Jada, Ella, and Daisy take turns at a podium in front of cameras.
I was way too afraid to report it because I was bullied, I was ostracized, I was threatened.
I found my voice when I decided to show my face in my first interview. The guys recorded and took photos of the sexual assault and then posted them online.
Finally, after being misunderstood for years and going through so much pain and absolutely hating myself, I decided that if no one's gonna talk about it, then I will.
Since my friends didn't stand up for me, I urge other people to speak out because you can't ignore an army of voices. And I would like to see people stand up for others who have been assaulted because the words of our enemies aren't as awful as the silence of our friends. Thank you.
A social media post reads, Daisy Coleman updated her profile picture. In the photo, Daisy grins as she holds a cat. More photos of her flash by, then a photo of Paige. In a photo of Delaney, she stands in front of a wall mural of wings, giving the appearance of them spreading out from her back. A photo of Ella shows her sticking out her tongue and making the devil horn sign. Jada stands with a raised fist in a photo, holding a sign that reads, hashtag I am Jada. A giant banner on a wall with For Audrey written on it displays messages and a red heart. The screen fades to black. Audrey appears in white, followed by and Daisy. More words appear, and Paige, and Delaney, and Savannah, and Rachel, and Jada, and Ella, and Jane Doe, and Jane Doe, and Jane Doe. And Jane Doe continues to fill the view, along with and John Doe, then recedes into the black background. More text. Teenagers experience the highest rates of rape and sexual assault. The young women who appear in this film are among the few who have told their stories publicly. Most survivors choose to remain anonymous. Directed by Bonnie Cohen and John Schenck. Produced by Richard Burge, Sarah Doza, yes, Bonnie Cohen. Director of Photography, John Schenck. Edited by Don Bernier. Original song, Flicker, written and performed by Tori Amos. Music by Tyler Strickland. Executive producers, Dan Kogan, Geraldine White-Dreyfus. Executive producer, Regina K. Scully. Executive producer, Cindy Wyatt. Executive producers, Barbara and Eric Dobkin, Jamie Wolf, William Hirsch. Help me. Executive producers, Jason Spingarn-Koff, Ben Kottner, Lisa Nishimura. Co-executive producer, Jenny Raskin. More credits roll. Copyright 2016, After Image Public Media. All rights reserved. www.audreyanddaisy.com. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.